We may now turn to the Word of God, to the Psalm read, Psalm 86. We come this evening to the consideration of another one of David's Psalms. According to the title, this is not just a Psalm, but a prayer of David. Undoubtedly, David would have offered many, many prayers unto God that would be unknown to us, but known to God. But it has pleased God to give us some indication as to the way in which the psalmist did pray and the kind of prayers that he offered to God. And so we consider this prayer to be an exemplary prayer. The prayer of David is exemplary to you and I, that we can follow his example when we find ourselves in the kind of straits that he found himself in so often. And we can learn much from the way in which David approached God and the way he prayed to God. A prayer of David. Martin Luther, I've probably maybe said it before, said that he could not understand many of the Psalms until he was actually afflicted. And it was in his affliction he began to really understand many of the Psalms, and that is perhaps the case with us all. It is when we find our own experience in the psalm that we understand it better. But as we consider here this prayer of David, there are a number of simple matters that we would draw attention to regarding it. And the first thing that we should consider is this prayer of David reveals to us his understanding of God himself. It would be pointless for the psalmist, just like anyone else, to come to God that he didn't know or didn't understand, that he was ignorant of. In this psalm, you can see what David knows and what he says about God that undoubtedly encouraged him to come to God and to pray to God. In verse 5, for example, he says, "Thou, Lord, art good, and ready to forgive, and plenteous in mercy unto all them that call upon thee." And the psalmist is calling upon God, but he's calling upon God that he knows and understands something about. "Thou, Lord, art good." The psalmist cannot see anything that's not good in God. And he says God is ready to forgive, not only that he does believe he forgives, but he's actually ready to forgive. How many things do we read of in the scriptures about God's readiness? And we might think to ourselves, what is God ready to do in any particular given situation, and we would be unsure. But here's something the psalmist is absolutely certain about. "Thou, Lord, art good and ready to forgive." That's one thing we can be sure God is always ready to do. He's always ready to forgive, and plenteous in mercy unto all them that call upon thee. And then you will see again in the verse 10 what the psalmist says, "For thou art great." Not only is God good, but he's also great. "Thou art great and doest wondrous things." The psalmist is speaking from experience, and he has learned in his experience that what God does surpasses anything of his expectation. He doeth wondrous things, things beyond our comprehension, things beyond our expectation. He does far more exceeding abundantly above and beyond what we can ask or even think. Thou art God alone. You can see that the psalmist is shut in, as it were, to God because he knows there's no one else to go to. Thou art God alone. There's no point in calling upon anyone else or going in any other direction. Thou art God alone. But then in verse 15, he continues, verse 15, but thou, O Lord, art a God full of compassion and gracious, long-suffering and plenteous in mercy and truth. You can see how the psalmist speaks of God. This is what he knows of God. This is the character of God. And it is because of his knowledge he's encouraged then to come to God and to bring all his needs and all his wants and all his concerns and bring them to God, because he knows this. As he says here, God is great and he doeth wondrous things. Whatever God does, if we really understand it, we must wonder at it. We must wonder at the wisdom and the knowledge of God, his overruling power in so many things. Do we say to God, do we speak to God in this fashion? Do we tell God, when we consider his ways and providence, that God does wondrous things? Is that how we view God? Is that when we come to God, we really believe? But then look at verse 8 again. Among the gods, there is none like unto thee, O Lord. Neither are any works like unto thy works. Isn't that something? Neither are there any works like unto thy works. You just look at the work of creation, and that's God's work. Look at the work of salvation, that's God's work. Is there any works like unto God's work in the saving of sinners? Is there any religion in the world anywhere that presents anything as wonderful and as amazing as God, who is thrice holy, condescending in his love and mercy to send his Son to save sinners and to pay the ransom price for their redemption, to actually make a full atonement for their sins? Truly, the psalmist has a knowledge of God that is not of his own simple grasping, but it's the work of God to reveal himself to the psalmist. But then, this knowledge that the psalmist had that encourages him, it encourages him to come to God in prayer in the deepest humility. Look at how he speaks at the beginning of the psalm. Bow down thine ear, O Lord, hear me. And then does he tell God how wonderfully he is, how and why he merits God's attention? Does he begin to describe his righteousness and his goodness before God? No, he says, bow down thine ear, O Lord, hear me. And who is it? I am poor and needy. I am poor and needy. I have nothing to glory in, nothing to boast of, nothing to present to God. This poor man coming before God, he's poor and he's needy. He has nothing to bring to God. He comes to God expecting to receive. And how blessed it is when we come to God in our emptiness, when we come to God in our nothingness, when we come to God as we really are, poor and needy. Now you will see in verse 13 what the psalmist says, "For great is thy mercy toward me." Great is thy mercy toward me. Have you ever wondered personally, has God's mercy toward yourself? Have you ever really considered it? Have you thought of the extent of it? This is what the psalmist is talking about. Not the mercy of God in a general way, how wonderful it is, but the experience of the mercy of God toward himself. That's what he's talking about. Thou hast delivered my soul from the lowest hell, or from going down to the grave. O God, the proud are risen against me, and the assemblies of violent men have sought after my soul, and have not set thee before them. You can see that the psalmist is in great straits. He's troubled. He's afflicted. He's, as it were, carrying a great burden before the Lord. But this is what he's able to confidently rejoice in. Great is thy mercy. Great is thy mercy, but it's great toward myself. Maybe we might have a tendency to look around us at some others, and maybe we think, well, isn't it a marvel that God had mercy on him? Isn't it a marvel that God had mercy on her? Because they were such great sinners, they were guilty of such terrible sins. And we might have that secret tendency, like the Pharisee, to be saying, well, thank God I didn't do what they did or go where they went. I wasn't like them. I wasn't in the depths of sin like them. And we might then begin to think, well, we just don't need as much mercy as they do. Or we don't expect that God would have to stoop so low in our case and extend such mercy to us. The psalmist speaks of God's great mercy toward himself, and he marvels at it. This is the God that he knows, and this is the God that he comes before in deepest humility, and look what he asks. Bow down thine ear, verse 1, O Lord, to hear me. He's asking God to come down to him, to come close to him. It's as though he wants God to listen as a friend. He wants God to come right down to where he is, that he might, as it were, whisper into the ear of God. But then look at what he says when he's addressing this God that he asked to come down to hear him, verse 4, "Rejoice the soul of thy servant, for unto thee, O Lord, do I lift up my soul." How amazing. He asked God to bow down his ear to him. And then he says, "I will lift up my soul to thee." And what an amazing coming together. When God bows down his ear and the psalmist lifts his soul heavenward, as it were, his whole being, that's what it really means, his whole being wants to leave everything else behind and just be alone with God. And he wants God to bow down, as it were, as a friend and an intimate friendship with him, so that he can speak into the ear of God, as it were. What a blessed picture it is. How often we try to pray out of mere duty. We would feel guilty if we didn't pray or if we didn't attempt to pray. But how blessed it is to have that experience of getting so near to God and of God come so near to us, as the psalmist is talking about here. This is the psalmist in deepest humility, recognizing the greatness of God, and yet he comes to God by faith, not just in humility, but it is the humility of believing faith. What does he say in verse 2? Preserve my soul, for I am holy, O thou my God, save thy servant that trusteth in thee. Save thy servant that trusteth in thee. I'm coming to thee trusting in thee. That's why he wants God to bow down his ear. And why he wants to lift up his soul so that he can speak to God as his most trusted friend. That's how we should be coming to God. As though he's our real friend, our most trusted friend, that we can disclose things to him. We can tell him the secrets of our hearts. We can be sure that we can talk to him in confidence. We can open up our very hearts to him with the confidence. We can absolutely trust him. You know yourself, in ordinary life and our associations with others, there's people we might say things to and we would say, well, I can trust him. I can trust him, or I can trust her. I can tell them things that I wouldn't tell to everyone, but I can tell him or her things because I trust them. This is what the psalmist is saying. I can tell God everything about myself and all my needs and all my concerns, all my secrets. I can tell him because I can absolutely trust him. I can trust him with my life. I can trust him with my burdens. I can trust him with all my trials and all my troubles. I can trust him and tell him all about them. And the psalmist, not only does he come to God in the exercise of faith, but in addition, he prays to God with confidence. He doesn't come to God saying, I trust thee, but of an uncertainty about it all. No, in verse 7, the psalmist says, in the day of my trouble, I will call upon thee. Isn't that something? In the day of my trouble, that I am talking to my friend about, in the day of my trouble, I will call upon thee. And what does he say? For thou wilt answer me. For thou wilt answer me. Now, whatever kind of an answer he might be expecting, or whatever kind of an answer God gives him, he has this certainty, God will answer. Thou wilt answer me. Give ear, he says in verse 6, O Lord, unto my prayer, and attend to the voice of my supplications in the day of my trouble. The psalmist, I'm sure, was well aware that there were many others that had troubles. Maybe they were very different from his troubles. But he's talking to his friend here. God is a friend. My troubles that have come to me, that aren't troubling anyone else, but they're troubling me. My burden that I have to bear, that others don't have to bear. In the day of my trouble, And God does send trouble. And God ordains to overrule the troubles that he sends to his people in his providence. But you see, God likes to hear his people. He delights in hearing them praying. He delights in hearing them calling upon him. And so God sends them circumstances, providences that make them call on God, that bring them to cry to him. And he hears their voice. And the psalmist says, in the day of my trouble, I will mourn and complain. No, he doesn't say anything like that. He doesn't say, in the day of my trouble, I'll sulk. In the day of my trouble, I will just forget God, because if he was wise and overruling, he wouldn't allow trouble to come to me. Sometimes that's what we think. And that's what sometimes we're tempted to think. God shouldn't allow any trouble to come to me. If God loved me, he would care about me. And he would prevent me having troubles. But no, the psalmist says, in the day of my trouble, this is how I will respond. I will call upon thee, for thou wilt answer me. But then, the psalmist, you see, knows this from experience. And so, out of his experience, he adopts a particular attitude to God, with particular expectations about how God might answer him. And you see what he prays for. He prays for instruction. You see, this psalmist doesn't want to go his own way, and he doesn't want to be left to himself. And he's actually praying to God for instruction. Look at what he says in verse 11. Verse 10, to get the connection again. Thou art great and doest wondrous things. Thou art God alone. Teach me thy way. Teach me thy way to understand thy way. I'm calling upon thee. I'm expecting an answer. But I need to be taught and I need to be instructed to learn that when God does things, it's his way. And he does wondrous things. And I have to learn to see the wonder in them, even when it's mysterious. And that's part of the wonder sometimes. How mysterious God's ways are. That should make us wonder. But sometimes we're disappointed and we think God shouldn't do that kind of thing. Teach me thy way, O Lord, and I will walk in thy truth. I will be obedient, and I will walk in thy truth, because I will marvel at the wondrous ways of God. Not my ways, but his ways. And so often, we almost challenge God. We almost imagine ourselves to be wiser than God. And we think to ourselves, well, why did God not do this? Why does God not do that? The psalmist, as we said already, comes before God in humility. He comes praising God for his great mercy toward him. And he's asking God to teach him. He doesn't think he knows it all. He doesn't think he's learned everything yet. He doesn't think he's the wisest man on earth yet. Teach me thy way. And it's very easy to say that. I tell you, it's very easy to pray, teach me thy way, and then not wait to be taught. and not be ready and willing to be taught. You see, God teaches us in his wisdom, and sometimes we're very slow learners. Every one of God's children learn that they're sometimes very slow learners, and they have to marvel at the patience and the forbearance of God as he teaches them line upon line, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little. How slow the disciples were to learn some of the things that the Savior had to teach them, and sometimes in order to teach them, he had to rebuke them. But here's what the psalmist is asking God to do. Teach me thy way. Show me thy way. O Lord, I will walk in thy truth. I don't want my own way. I don't want to go my own way. And then he prays this, unite my heart to fear thy name. Unite my heart. What does the psalmist know about God? Things that encourage him to pray. But then what does he know about himself? He knows he's got a wandering heart. He's got a deceitful heart. And he's praying for God to do something with his heart. And what does he want God to do with it? To draw it away from all the other things that he feels it's attached to and that it's cleaving to. And unite my heart with thyself. Unite my heart to fear thy name. Do we ever feel God's absence? Do we ever feel a sense of the absence of God, as though our hearts are not really united with him? Do we feel the world tugging and drawing us away and pulling us away? Do we feel at times our hearts are divided? On the one hand, we want to serve God. We want to love God. On the other hand, we're lusting after the world and the carnal interest that draws away from God. The psalmist has discovered something about himself. And he prays that God would deal with it and unite his heart to fear his name. Remember what we said at the beginning? This is an exemplary prayer. The kind of things the psalmist is praying for is what we ourselves need to pray for. But then look at something else about the psalmist's prayer. He not only prays for instruction, but he prays consistently and persistently. Look at how he speaks to God in verse 3. Be merciful unto me, O Lord, for I cry unto thee daily. I cry unto thee daily. Why is he doing this? Because he feels he's afflicted daily. He feels that every day, you remember, how Asaph was troubled. He saw the prosperity of the wicked. And they weren't troubled the way he was being troubled. And he said every day was afflicted and every day was troubled and burdened. And there's the wicked. They don't serve God. They don't love God. They don't obey God. And they seem to be prospering every day. And here am I. Well, the psalmist says, I cry unto thee daily. Well, yes, the Savior teaches us to pray for our daily bread because we're so dependent upon him. But the psalmist is not talking about mere requests for necessities. He's feeling the trials and the troubles of life dearly. It seems they never cease. Every day, some of the Lord's dear people, that's how they feel. And they think to themselves, will there ever be any relief for me at all? Will I ever get peace? Will the sun ever come through the clouds? Will I ever have one day of joy and peace and tranquility? Here's the psalmist, the man after God's own heart. And he says, I cry unto thee daily, like a little child, so dependent on the parent to provide its needs. It's just able to cry. The psalmist isn't talking about articulating his thoughts in a wonderful way to God to impress him. All he can do is cry. He doesn't know what else to do. But this is what he's certain of. Thou wilt answer me. He knows God will respond when he does cry. And how marvelous it is when you think of it. The psalmist saying, bow down thine ear to hear me, and I will lift up my soul to thee. But it has to be daily because my trials and troubles are daily. Doesn't seem to be any relief from them. But how marvelous it is that God hears him every day. You think how wonderful that is. You're thinking to yourself perhaps, well, I have to cry every day to God. But isn't it marvelous that you have that communion with God every day? And you see, whenever we begin to see things God's way and look at things from God's perspective, then we can see how wonderful, how marvelous is thou doest wondrous things. And this is one of the wonderful things that God does. He keeps his people praying. He keeps them in situations where they can't do anything else but just daily keep crying to him. And sometimes we're tempted to give up. You imagine David, he doesn't say how many days he was crying, he just said it was every day. Was it 10 days? Was it 40 days? What was it? We don't know. But what we know is this, God kept him doing it. And sometimes that's exactly what God does. Because he loves to hear the voice of his children. And even when it's a cry, like every mother, because she's a mother, she delights to hear the cry of her living child. It's a sweet sound to her. That's my child. Child belongs to me. We have a relationship. And that's what God does. And he keeps his children crying to him daily. Because you see, he does wondrous things. And the psalmist, in verse 16, praise, O turn unto me and have mercy upon me. Give thy strength unto thy servant and save the son of thine handmaid. Isn't that a marvelous petition? Give thy strength unto me, thy servant. Give me strength. No, that's not what he prays. Give thy strength. I am poor and needy, and I'm weak, and I'm helpless, and I'm so weak I'm crying every day. But give me thy strength. Now let me ask you something. Is there anything that can overcome God's strength? You and I know the answer to that. Now the psalmist says, give me thy strength. Put thy strength into me. Put thy strength into this poor, weak, helpless creature. This is an exemplary prayer. These petitions are real petitions. And they teach us how to come to God. Put thy strength, give thy strength unto thy servant, and save the son of thine handmaid. Show me a token for good, that they which hate me may see it, and be ashamed, because the Lord hast holpen me and comforted me. How personal the psalmist becomes here. He's talking to God, who has done so much for him. Thou hast holpen me with thy strength. Where would you and I be if we didn't have God's strength put into our weak constitutions? The psalmist knows what he's talking about. Thy strength will enable me to overcome. Thy strength will enable me to endure. Thy strength will enable me to battle on against the forces of darkness. That's what the psalmist is talking about. And you can see the note of gratitude as he comes to the end of this psalm. He's taken up with God. He's confident in God. He believes God, he trusts God, and he's expecting God to do wondrous things, to continue doing them. And this is the God that you and I have come to pray to tonight. This is the God that we come to Wednesday by Wednesday, and on other occasions. This is the God we bow before in our own homes and in our own private devotions. Is this the God, the same God that the psalmist had? Is that the same God you and I are calling upon? Is that the God that we're really trusting? The God who doeth wondrous things, and we want him to teach us to understand his ways that are wondrous and marvelous in our eyes. And when we look at the great and wondrous work of redemption, we view the Son of God in our nature. Can you think of anything more wondrous, more marvelous? God manifest in the flesh. God and man and two natures, one person forever. What a marvelous work that is. God, a very God, becoming man, a very man. And God providing in his Son a full, free, perfect, finished atonement for sin. Do we consider God's works to be truly marvelous? Do we wonder at them? Do we come to God because of what we know of him, with confidence in him as a real friend? May God bless these remarks to us.